Hi, welcome to Soul Centered. This is Rabbi Baruch Levy, Rabbi B, or just B. Delighted that you've tuned into this podcast. Soul Centered is a center for spirituality, meaning, and healing in the afternoon of life for anybody in the afternoon of life. And what is the afternoon of life? It's pretty much truth and advertising as it sounds. The afternoon of life, somewhere midlife onwards, where we have new goals, new rules, new tools for a new phase of our life. And so Soul Centered was founded by my wife, Ariella, and I to help guide people through that phase from the morning into the afternoon so we can live with greater purpose and authentic power at a time when our lives, when the world around us says we're less than, when we're kind of diminishing, when our powers are waning. And that's not the truth. If we can make this shift and again, change the goals and the rules and the tools, excuse me. And so Soul Centered is a center to have these conversations and to do this work. Ariella and I work with individuals through counseling, clients, both individually and together, and we'll tell you more about that later, but also providing all different types of experiences, educational experiences, and experiences to embody this work, not just to talk about it, and other times to simply talk about it, because you have to have these conversations, bring these ideas into life. And so we started Soul-Centered Conversations, which is this podcast. Now, this is the very first episode of Soul-Centered Conversations as an interview. I've done a couple. I'm now on my own, and Ariella and I have started to do some, but I have yet to do one interviewing anybody. And I'm not alone on this podcast right now. I am with my first interviewee, and she's here by no mistake. She's here by absolute design, because I thought if I was going to have somebody on as a first interviewee and person to have a conversation with, I wanted to have this person. So it is my delight and pleasure to introduce you to Barb Hirschgiller. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Rabbi.
So she calls me Rabbi, even though we're really best buds and we've been friends for so long and soulmates in so many ways. But Barb and I met, how many years ago has it been, Barb?
Probably 15 plus.
15 plus. Well, I know it's been... Yeah, I was ordained as a rabbi in 2002, and my first pulpit, my first synagogue was in Des Moines, Iowa, where Barb is from, though you're not currently there. You're currently in Clear Lake.
Right, right. It's our home away from home.
So she and Harvey were congregants of mine and their wonderful children, four children. And I met Barb, so I guess it was, 18 years or whatever it's been a long time. And I have to say, I've really maintained friendships with a handful of people at each stage of my journey as a rabbi, but from that stage, a handful. And Barb has been front and center in my life ever since. So it's a delight to have you on this podcast.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I would absolutely echo the connection that exists between us, Baruch. It's been so meaningful and life-changing for me. And I think in turn that has impacted the way I move through the world with my family, in the work that I've done, our relationship and what we've shared and what I have learned from you has just been pretty amazing.
Well, thank you. It's it's a two-way street, and we've, even though, and in addition to always remaining friends, we formally resumed a conversation, I don't know, 3-6 months ago, somewhere in there, where for a thousand different reasons, the universe brought us back formally into one another's lives, and we began a coaching soul therapeutic conversation. And I think that for me has been a delight in so many levels, and that'll factor into our conversation today.
Absolutely. And as you said, the universe has not only brought us together, but brought changes in life, at least for me, that I would never, ever have anticipated, and really has allowed for this experience to happen and to grow.
And I guess that takes us into the nature of this conversation that I wanted to have. Again, soul-centered being an educational, experiential guidance center for the afternoon of life. And Barb and I, we began this conversation. In fact, you're one of my first formal clients in this area. You know, I've been counseling people for 2 decades now and formally resuming it about a year ago. But this conversation of the afternoon of life hit me. You know, you have these moments in life, these ideas that come to you, and it just changes everything. I'm sure you've had some of those yourself. And I feel like we've had one around this afternoon of life.
Absolutely. And I can remember the moment it happened. It was a very unfortunate experience at this point, or perhaps a growing experience, we can say. There was a death of one of our friends, but it opened that very unusual time that we have when we can just sit together over coffee, and this whole thing just coalesced, this whole new relationship of soul coaching and my spiritual and soul growth that even in this short period of time has changed the trajectory of really everything for me.
And that really takes us into the heart of, you know, the afternoon of life. And I want to hear that. I want the folks who are listening to hear more about your remarkable journey and this journey of growth. And now that you're really seeing yourself in well into the afternoon of life. And we talk a lot about the kind of the shift between, and the afternoon of life is also nuanced. It isn't that there's morning and there's afternoon. There's different stages in each of those. An early afternoon versus later in afternoon are also stages within a larger phase. And so you've really been somebody who I've always seen as taking your life incredibly seriously and being as, you know, intentional and thoughtful, proactive as you, as anybody can be, to move forward mindfully into these stages. And so when we came together, I feel like you were at this kind of a crossroads of shifting from your professional life into what's next.
Correct.
And, you know, originally we were calling it retirement. And I think together we came up with the reality that the knowing that that's a terrible word. Right.
Right.
Right. Even the word tired is built into it. And right. Knowing you, Barb, you're anything but tired. You have like so much life energy. And so we talked about, I think, re-inspirement as a way better alternative. Like I don't know if I want to be retired, but I want to be re-inspired.
And that's exactly right. I feel like I reached this moment. It's not a peak, because that would indicate a downward going forward, but it is certainly a moment in time of a critical nature where you know that everything has to shift, everything has to change, and that is by design and by desire. I did not want to continue the belief systems and the things that I was doing, and the coalescence of so many factors has brought me to this point of understanding I have so many more choices than I've ever had in my life, that I can use the energy to really do and be in these later years of my life what I've been longing for all of my life.
That's just so inspiring, right? To hear somebody and to work with you and get to know you in a different capacity. You know, we never worked as kind of client and counselor coach. And to get to watch you so passionately think about, well, what is this time going to mean to me? And how can I, you know, getting to know you, I'd say a word that comes to mind over and over again is service. Would you say that's a word that describes part of your reason for being?
I think it is so much a part of my reason for being. And that goes back to my father, who was such a servant. And I think that I learned that is just the highest form of giving as a human being. The darker side of that is you can serve everyone else. And I think that's a danger of people in service, but also I think especially for women who are programmed to believe that they just have to bleed service. And the last thing on the list is to take care of yourself.
And, you know, when we met, you were really coming, you know, you were obviously out of the mourning of life, but still operating like most of us with mourning of life rules, even though you were in the afternoon, you know, being in a profession, by definition, it means you're, you know, busy, outward focused, outward serving. And you know, when we started this, you even said consciously, I want to shift those rules and live in the afternoon differently. And then we started talking a lot about service, and you came to that kind of conclusion on your own of, but what about service of like me? Or maybe actually thinking about it, you didn't come to it on your own. That wouldn't have been a conversation you would have started. I forced you into that.
That's absolutely right. That's right.
But I feel like it's a light bulb. It was a light bulb moment for you. I'm just a messenger bringing to you what, you know, you need to remember. It felt like to me there was a light bulb of, yeah, like what about service of self, not as, and we talk a lot about this, not as selfish, but as self-centering, or I'd say soul-centering, to bring Bar back to the center, because for so long, the morning and into the afternoon, in some ways, like all of us, you'd lost your center a little bit.
You know, I would say that you strongly, I wouldn't say forced, but you strongly encouraged me and would not let me go with the idea of soul centering versus service outward. And I think we are programmed to such an extent, and certainly my work as a social worker encouraged the feeling that I am nothing if I am not serving everyone else. And, you know, it becomes almost a little addictive. You start to feel that you are of value when you are serving others. And, you know, there's a great deal of self in that, because they are grateful to you and you begin to feel that that's your value, as opposed to just believing that you alone are enough. And I think at this point in time, when we started working together, that was really a frightening time for me. I had retired in the truest sense of the word. And I think looking forward, I was almost a little manic about what's next. What do I do next? What do I do next to be of value to others and thus to myself? Mm-hmm. And it was scary because I didn't know.
And you didn't know because we don't know. You know, that's the mourning. And our society is built for the mourning, very much so. We revere the mourning. What does that mean? I mean, we've talked a lot about it. I don't want to assume people listening know, because I didn't know. But we talk about the mourning as a time of doing, right? And some of the rules are, I am what I have, right? It's a time of accumulation. This isn't pejorative. It's not negative. It's just it's a time of accumulation. You're accumulating knowledge. So, you know, school after school, and I know you're a knowledge junkie like I am, and it's more titles and it's more trainings and it's accumulation, and it's accumulation of stuff, a house and all the stuff that goes in it. And these are important, wonderful things, but the rules are, I am what I have and I am what I do. Right? And there's Dalai Lama who said, you know, we're not human doings, we're human beings. But the morning of life is not necessarily a time for being. It's a time for doing. And what we talked a lot about, we continue to talk about, is you take those rules unchallenged into the afternoon, and then you just start applying them, because that's what we know. And you apply them now in the time of being, not in doing, and take something like retirement or re-inspired. We call it retirement for now, not to confuse everybody. And then you say, okay, now what do I do in retirement? Because that's what I know. I did in the morning. I'm supposed to do in the afternoon. And our conversations early on were, okay, B, help me figure out what to do. Right?
That's absolutely right. And I wouldn't say there was frustration, but I remember asking you for a plan for these years that are coming. And I also told you that I want to live until I die. I don't want to just waste away. And I was just so focused on figuring out my next activity that it never occurred to me that I can be valuable, that I can be meaningful to others, but also to myself. The thought had never occurred to me that post-pandemic, I don't have to race out and find 10 other things to keep me busy, that I can be something even more as I create the legacy for my 4 children, perhaps for my husband if I predecease him, but also for all of the people that I have connected with in what is already a relatively long life.
And by the way, happy birthday. I won't out you, but it's Bar's birthday on the 4th of July. So you all thought out there that you were celebrating Independence Day, but in fact, we've been celebrating Barb Hirschgiller's birthday. So.
Absolutely. Fireworks are for me, one of my friends said.
Which is so funny because if you know Barb and you're getting to know her, she'd be the last person to want fireworks shot up in the air for her, right? That would mean people are paying attention to you and you like paying attention to everybody else, which is very the conversation. True. But I guess that takes me into, you know, this back to this word of service. I do want to come back to legacy, but for now, coming back to service, because the morning of life taught you, as it teaches everybody, service means other, especially, you know, as a mom and as a wife and as a daughter in a particular generation. It's changed, not completely, but certainly dramatically. And we've talked a lot about service meant other and all those people around you and not you. And one of the things I've seen you shift so gracefully, and she's laughing. Okay, maybe like your heels are dug in and you're, you know, resisting. So, but you've had the courage to challenge your assumptions and your preconceptions and now start to shift to say, but maybe the service in the afternoon of life is by putting myself center and modeling to my loved ones and the people around me that service of self is service of other. Because in the end, it's how you sustain your oxygen level, your energy level, your ability to be here. If you don't tend to yourself, you drift away, you lose yourself. Who's really serving all these people if you're running around and you lose yourself in the process?
You know, that is a radical idea for a woman of my generation. And I'm perfectly comfortable saying that on the 4th of July this year, I'm turning 70. I like to think of myself as a young 70. But that is not a concept that we were taught. And throughout my whole life, my service has been directed outward. I started as a nurse. I raised my family and then became a social worker to a pretty critical and traumatized population. So the idea that I can be of service was something I really had to learn. And that is where working with you was absolutely, again, critical to where I am at this time. I think I told you a few weeks ago, all of the moments that have conspired, the pandemic, a number of things in my own personal life that have caused me to be absolutely, absolutely quiet. I had no idea that these were possibilities for me, that I could get to this place. And I have wondered what it would be like if we hadn't been working together, if I hadn't gained these understanding of options so that I could be where I am today. I have a feeling that post-retirement, et cetera, it may not be a very pretty scene for me. I may not be feeling very happy.
It takes tremendous courage to challenge our assumptions, right? To challenge the rules that we've inherited, whether they're from our religion or our family or our culture. I think it's one of the greatest acts of bravery to say, I don't know. And I'm willing to say, I don't know. It's a scary thing. You know, we live in a society that's all about control. And the morning is all about control. You and I both know so much of it is a false, you know, illusion of control to kind of maintain like sanity. We pretend like we're in the driver's seat. I think that's one of the beautiful aspects of the afternoon of life is it gives you the opportunity to let go. And if you don't, we talk a lot about then the shattering will eventually come and it'll force you to let go. And I've seen in you somebody, it's exceptional. And I don't just say this to, you know, inflate your ego, because I know you and I know that that's not, that doesn't speak to you. I wouldn't do it even if it did. But you've been able to really kind of proactively embrace this. I know you've had shatterings, but you're also choosing to do it. And that's, to me, so inspiring.
And I think that is one of the learning tools that we as a culture do not utilize, the idea of choice. And this has become so much more clear to me now that I can really choose the path forward. And there are choices that I have along the way every single day that can enhance not only my life, but the quality of everyone around me. And I love to think of that, you know, as the ripple when a rock hits water, that there are emanations from my soul that go beyond just this world. And, you know, I think everybody tries to make the world, quote, a better place. And I like to think that I now have the opportunity by soul centering to enhance those emanations. And I didn't have those tools before. I didn't know. But it's all about choices and choices we make every hour of every day.
Yeah, you know, my love and training is with Dr. Viktor Frankl and logotherapy, as you know, I'm sharing with our listeners. The logo means word, but it also means meaning. And so logotherapy is meaning-centered therapy. And his thesis, as you know, is that if we have meaning, right, that we are here for meaning. We're meaning creatures. You know, Freud talks a lot about pleasure. And one of the challenges of the afternoon of life from a kind of a Freudian traditional perspective is pleasure starts diminishing, you know, all kinds of appetites start diminishing, physicality starts diminishing. So it's a downward descent. Adler, the second school of psychotherapy, talks about power. And when we have frustration of power, frustration of pleasure, we have neuroses. So the afternoon of life is a diminishing of traditional thoughts about power, professional power and influence in the world. And it's a downward descent into hell. But Frankl says it's about meaning and purpose. And that's where I think, you know, it gets so exciting because then the afternoon can be all about purpose. You can see more purposefully and start living out your deepest calling and grow in power in the afternoon of life. And I feel like that's what you've been doing. I've watched you kind of waking up to, you know, what is it that I'm here to do and what makes me powerful, not in the morning terms, but in the afternoon terms, which is influence and legacy. And I've just seen you come alive in the afternoon of life, which is just awesome.
Well, thank you. I think part of the ability to get to this place has been that you and I have together worked through some of my morning junk, my morning stuff. And I think that's important. You know, I've never been a therapist. I've been an advocate and a counselor. But you have had the ability to, you know, encourage me strongly to deal with my morning stuff. And that has allowed me to make that critical shift to realize that there are new rules now, and I can live my life with so much more peace and so much more purpose than I ever have before. And I think the at the end of the day, the beauty of this has been for me that I am not living fearfully. And I look back, and I know I said to you not long ago, I wish I had known all of this when I was in the morning, that having more and joining more and doing more was not going to bring me the peace that I always craved. On the contrary, it took it away. But I now know that I have the choices and the capacity to work toward the peace. And I feel different. I feel different in my body, in my soul. And I see it as I'm working with very dear friends. Unfortunately, I have had been surrounded by a couple of deaths in these last couple of weeks that have shaken some very close friendships to the core. But I feel so peaceful about living in this place with these people and being able to help them feel some peace as well.
And, you know, you say I taught you, but I resist that as much as I help. And I feel this way, you know, with everybody I work with, especially with you. I help you remember what you always were and what you already knew. I believe, you know, we use the that old saying about Michelangelo creating the statue of David. And they ask him, you know, like, how did you create the statue? And he said, it was easy. I just chipped away everything that wasn't David, right? And I sometimes feel like the morning, we just add these layers and layers and layers of other people's expectations and our own expectations based on other people's rules. And then we get to this midlife place where it's like we look in the mirror and we say, like, I know I'm in there somewhere. I just can't exactly remember who she is and where she, what she wants and where she's going. And I feel like the work we've been doing is just kind of chipping away some of those layers, like plaque that have built up over time, to get back to the essence, to the David, to the Barb, right at the center.
Right. I think something to note there is, though, that Michelangelo was doing the chipping. So for David to become David, I think oftentimes, and you have played that role for me for so many years, but, and I hope that that's mutual, but you have been the chipper, and I am profiting from that. And finally, you know, I remember I was in therapy many, many, many years ago, and the therapist said to me, what is it you're seeking? What do you want? And I said, I want peace. I want to feel peaceful. And it was the morning of my life. I didn't feel peaceful, but I don't think I even knew what that meant. I don't think I knew what peaceful meant. I had to have a chipper. I had to have someone who'd hang with me in order to do this work that I am feeling.
So, you know, like all of our conversations, it's never, you know, you say it and I agree and I say it, you agree, and we challenge each other. And my job in life, as our clergy say, is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And so try and do both. And what you just said is, you know, I think a lot of it's true, but we also talk a lot about there are two yous, there are two me's, right? There's self and there's soul. And I love, together we've developed this language around she. She, and you know, you and I know when we are talking about she or her, we're talking about your soul. You know, and we've named her and we have all these wonderful things that we've developed around her, but we start talking about she, and whenever we talk about chi, like your eyes start glowing and you light up and there's this flow and this energy of, yeah, that's it. And that's the remembering that I feel like I just help you do. I help myself do sometimes with myself, is remember chi, or in me, I call it he, but you call it whatever you want. And I just feel like the work we do sometimes is just helping you remember, or helping give her voice back.
Absolutely. I don't think I acknowledged her for a good chunk of my life. I think I had to work through some of my mourning challenges to allow her to be a part of me. Mm-hmm. And that has been a process of integrating her, my soul, into myself. So there are two of us. I think there's probably two of everyone. But the soul is, I think you are the one that said the soul can be very quiet and shy is the word I believe you used. And the morning rules are so noisy and the morning life is so noisy that I believe it takes some shattering, some huge transition, which I've experienced, to allow yourself to start to listen to your she. And she's much more present to me now. I hear her, I feel her. It's, again, a process of integration.
So I don't think I said it. I do think Mary Oliver said it, a poet that we both adore. And I read about, I met Mary Oliver, I didn't meet her physically, but I've met her work and I feel like I know her through Parker Palmer. Have you ever read Parker Palmer?
A little.
Mm-hmm. I love Parker Palmer too. He's a Quaker. I don't think he's a minister. He's a teacher, but he comes from the Quaker tradition.
Yes.
And you know, Quakerism built very beautifully around silence and holding silent space as a form of getting in touch with her, him. And anyways, he introduced me to Mary Oliver. And then I said to Barb before she got on this interview, I said, you know, bring to this something that speaks to you. And you had shared this with me before, but it happened to be Mary Oliver, right? The poem, The Journey. And I read this and I do see you. I hear her in it. And I feel like it's kind of this remembering poem that you've carried with you that maybe gives her voice. Would you be so bold as to read it for us?
Of course. I have loved this poem and shared this with more people than I could ever imagine, because I think it's where so many of us are. The name of the poem is The Journey, one of Mary Oliver's most famous and most beloved poems. And here's what she says. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice. The whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough and a wild night and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save.
Man, I just feel like she just said in 15 lines what we've been saying over the past half hour or so, right?
Right.
So it's obvious, but, you know, well, what about this speaks to her and you?
It is. I feel like it's my story. I feel like there are so many distractions, so many needs in the world. And as a woman, I know that we are programmed to listen to those voices that are calling out, mend my life. But as you move into the afternoon of your life, for so many reasons, if you are listening, if you're privileged enough to chip away at some of the stone and the clouds clear, you come to realize one truth, and that is your choices and your life is yours alone. And I can only save my own life. I can only make of my life what I choose. And I just feel like that's my story, and particularly at this moment.
Yeah, and you know, and sort of, we start to wind down here, wrap up. Back to that word legacy that you introduced a while back, right? I feel like what you've been really doing is, I call it designing your legacy. You know, oftentimes we just think a legacy is a passive activity. It just happens, and that's the story we get that's told about us after we're gone, and it's the messages that people pick up on after, you know, we've left. And what I feel like you're doing is you're designing, you're architecturing your legacy, and really working through the old, what is it here? She said it so beautifully, the old tug.
Right.
Like there's these old rules that pull you back into them. And if we're not mindful, and if we don't consciously work to get away from that tug, we'll just end up, you know, in the afternoon of life, just like we were in the morning of life, and miss this opportunity. And what I feel like you're doing is you're designing a legacy that you want to be left for those who come after you.
That is really my work now. I think when I was thinking of what I have to do, it isn't an actual doing of the hands, but much more of the heart and of the soul. And you think about, interestingly, my husband and I just signed our wills 2 days ago. And as we were working on those, I started thinking, what is my spiritual will? What is my soul's will? And I think about many of the things I did during the morning of my life, and certainly the late morning, more specifically to me. And I hope that represents part of my legacy, a legacy of service and love for other people. Certainly, I learned that from my father, that many times the least of these, that was his concentration. And also, it has been mine for the people who most need you. I want my children to pay attention to that. But I also want them to learn from the example of what I will do from here forward as well, so that these years are very well spent in consideration of living without fear, of living with boldness, of living with purpose, and living with consummate compassion and empathy for others, and modeling that by living that way myself. It's words, it's deeds, but it's also those emanations from the rock and the stream that their souls can receive at some point in their life as I create those ripples.
Wow, that's just like so empowering. And you know, when you're talking, I feel this power, like authentic power. You know, we're living in a world right now that's grappling with what is power. And I think of, you know, the Martin Luther Kings and the Rosa Parks and the Nelson Mandelas and the Natan Sharanskys, who they demonstrated like this authentic soul power because their external circumstances never dictated their internal response. Right, Viktor Frankl calls it responsibility, the ability to respond and not react as ultimate power. And I just watch the growth you're going through and the intention, you know, you've put out and the work you're doing as responsibility. And what a legacy to leave, to design, And I'm tired of saying leaving a legacy because it's about living a legacy.
Right.
And that's what I see in Barb Hirschgiller, is a woman who's just emanating this soul power to live a legacy. And God willing, you know, in 50 birthdays from now, when you're 120, that's what we say in Judaism. We say until 120, a Bay of Esri. There's a rabbinic joke. It's not funny, but rabbis aren't funny, but it's still a joke. So if you say, you know, to somebody, may you live until 120. What do you say to them on their 120th birthday? Right? On the 4th of July in 50 years, what are we going to say to you? You're 120. You say, what do you say to them? Do you know?
No.
You say, have a good day.
So. Probably, yes. I guess, you know, in conclusion, one of the things that I think is really important for me to add is that as I approached my 70th birthday, even a year ago, you know, I turned 69 and I think my eyes were kind of wide and there was this kind of anxiety around this birthday coming. And what I feel now, you know, literally a week from my birthday, is such joy and such excitement about the years to come. And it doesn't make so much difference to me anymore how many there are, but how I am living them. And I just know that that would not necessarily have been the case for me. I am happy to be moving into this new aspect of my life without fear, without anxiety, and with a measure of unbridled pleasure that I don't think I've known before.
That's so hopeful and inspiring. And I am honored to be your soul companion, right, on this amazing journey and watching you come into your authentic full power. And, you know, I just wish you until 120, 50 more years of this authentic soul power, but however long you're here, right, that you just keep designing and living your legacy. And it is quite a legacy already in the making. So thank you and happy birthday.
Thank you, Baruch. It's such a pleasure.
So that concludes my first interview with one of the most special people in my life. And I know that this was a first interview with Barb. It is definitely not a last. I look forward to having you back on as we explore, you know, tools and rules of the afternoon of life. So many, many more. And thank you to all of our listeners. I'm sure you're in the thousands and thousands at this point. There's too many of you to name and thank, but we're delighted. If you like this, go to iTunes and leave a 5-star review if you think it's worthy of 5 stars or wherever you're listening to it. And love to hear from you. You can get a hold of me at rabbib@mysoulcentered.org. You can Google Rabbi B or you can go to the website, mysoulcentered.org. Lots of exciting things. Ariella and I are just rolling and flowing with this soul-centered and feeling called to continue to bring these experiences and these opportunities, and would love to work with you. So if you're interested in having conversations, soul conversations one-on-one, give us a shout and we would love to schedule a complimentary consultation to talk about how we might work together. So if you're an American, have a happy 4th of July. If you're not an American, and if whoever you are, wherever you are, have a blessed, soulful Saturday and Sunday, and look forward to seeing you in the near future. So until then, shalom, salam, namaste, and peace.